Welcome to our newest episode of the Lebanese Physicians podcast. And today we will be discussing actually developing like startups in healthcare, trying to save money. And our guest today actually is Reza Sinai, who is not necessarily Lebanese, but he's married to a great Lebanese woman who's a
beauty. I actually have citizenship now. So I actually technically am Lebanese.
So technically he's Lebanese now too. So Reza actually graduated medical school at the George Washington University School of Medicine and then did his residency and fellowship at GW and ended up joining an independent cardiology practice in town and has worked his way up the ladder in the practice. He will discuss that more with us today. Welcome, Reza, to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me.
So Reza, basically the reason I invited you today is one, I think you're a physician who not only has done clinical care, but you have been able to go into the business side of medicine, whether it's in the cardiology practice or whether it's in developing the app that we will discuss today to Picasso MD. So we'll talk about it in a bit. But so how did you ascend the ladder in the practice and get involved in the day-to-day management of the practice?
Yeah, for me, like everyone, it has different things that fulfill them. For me, it's always, you know, a lot of us take extraordinary pride in what we do. And so part of that was learning a lesson very early on that, you know, the keys to success are just to be always available, to be kind, and do good work. So that was something that I wanted to make foundational in my practice. And the best way to do that is just to roll your sleeves up and try to implement workflows, processes that you think would scale within a practice. So yeah, joined the practice after a couple of years, became the managing partner along with one of my colleagues, and then tried to create a workflow where I was happy with. So an environment that I was happy with, a culture that I was happy with. So that was the best way to do that, was just to kind of be part of the leadership. So I just kind of dedicated myself to that mission within the practice.
And I guess once you became part of the leadership, what did you notice in the healthcare landscape in the U.S.? Like, I know you've been in practice now for how many years approximately?
Probably 13 years, something like 13 or 15 years, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you notice a lot of things that are different in residency and fellowship. So we're not, when you would, you know, you and I would go and round in the hospital, we would meet each other. We knew who the good pulmonologist was, the good cardiologist, et cetera. There was a sense of camaraderie. And then you go into practice and you're spending the majority of your time documenting in front of patients. There's a complete loss of connection with your colleagues. So I remember over time, there's a term for it now, but back then, realizing that my day-to-day was being spent basically behind a computer, some with the patient and zero with my colleagues. Like zero connection. And what I was realizing that at a certain point, like you see patients walk in your office and you're like, this patient, I wish they never had been sent. They didn't need to be sent. Or how come that patient was in the emergency room for that EKG? And you realize that the lack of connectivity not only was creating you to feel more isolated in day-to-day practice, but that lack of connectivity was actually resulting in worse care. Patients, not because the providers were being negligent, but because they had no better choice. If you're reviewing an EKG as a primary care provider or a pulmonologist, and you're not exactly sure what to do with that EKG, the safest thing is to refer that patient out. Or if you're reviewing an EKG and you're not really trained to kind of evaluate clinically what's going on with that patient, then you're going to send a patient emergency room. So what I was realizing was like, if we could just be involved earlier and that decision making, we could help with that kind of overall process. That's what kind of spawned my day-to-day frustration. Got spawned the thought of like creating Picasso to kind of help maybe partially address some of those problems.
Right. So basically, it's more like there's no connectivity. Doctors don't necessarily have the time or the means to talk to other doctors. And also, I think what I've noticed too, because I moved to Lebanon, moved back here, what I've noticed is the difficulty of getting access to care for patients. For example, if you want to find a primary care physician, especially in the DC area right now, it's very hard to find one. It might be a concierge practice. And then if you want to find a specialist to see you, it's like 4 month wait to get in to see a specialist.
there's no warmness to the system. No, it's a very cold overall process. I bet you back when you were back to Lebanon, if you had someone that you wanted to connect with for X specialty, you probably had their contacts and a mobile number, or you'd call your family friends who would know, you know, 6 degrees of separation at the maximum to find that specialist, and you probably would directly communicate them. Here, there's none of that. There's a complete isolation, complete lack of understanding who the quality local specialists are. It's just you refer the patient out, and good luck. Patient has to kind of navigate the healthcare system. It's a different approach, and probably our culture is maybe what shaped what of the birth of the platform as well. Because it's like that lack of that warm nature of handoffs that results in bad care. So that's a long-winded answer, but some cultural elements as well.
Right, exactly. It's basically like I've had a lot of people here who would contact me and say, well, you know, we want to see this and this ENT physician and we can't get in. Can you contact someone? And then I have to contact my friends in ENT, tell them, please see.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it gets to be a... So can you tell us a bit about what is Picasso MD and how did you come up with the idea like behind starting it? Were you like just sitting like... I don't know, in a dream, and then it came to you, and
definitely nothing that exciting. No, it's just like everything. You get frustrated, and then you try to look for other solutions. Like, oh, there must be a way for me if I needed to get answers to something. And the closest thing is up to date. I don't know if I'm sure you probably use it a little bit, but it's really not that elegant. It's just a scraping of publications. It's not a thoughtful direct feedback loop for questions that I had as a specialist. And I don't know how you are, but when patients walk into your office and you have no idea why they're there, there's no background of why the patient is there, that creates an erosion of like knowing what to do best for your patient. So if someone comes in for a murmur, if I had just known that you were coming in for a murmur, I would have ordered an ultrasound. But they walk in, they're like, I'm like, hi, Mr. Diab, nice to meet you. Who sent you? Oh, my primary care sent me 3 weeks ago. They told me I heard something on my exam and that I should come see you. And I had no context around that. So for me, it was just growing more and more frustrated to the point where I couldn't find any solution. And then getting to a point that I would, you know, write it on a piece of paper, and over the course of a year or two, kind of refining the vision and getting to a point where I thought, you know, it's worth trying. And then, so the goal of what we want to try to accomplish is a very straightforward problem that everyone can kind of relate to. The first is, as a provider, whether it's in a normal primary care office or urgent care, retail clinic, home clinic, you want to supercharge the decision-making of that provider. They're seeing a patient, they have a question about what to do with the patient. And in the US, the only options are be 100% confident what to do with the patient, diagnose and treat them and send them home, or you're going to refer them out or send them to emergency room. Those are the three choices: diagnose and treat, refer, or ER. And that decision is being made mainly by non-physicians who are trying to provide the safest level of care. So referrals are going out the door at a high clip, ERs at a high clip. And so the first problem we're trying to solve is if you could just simply introduce a workflow where if a provider has a question, they could instantly connect with a specialist and run that case by a specialist in real time, then that provider will probably have more information, better information on deciding what to do with the patient. So less ER visits going out at the PCP office, less referrals going out. And then, and also kind of creating a higher provider satisfaction on their day-to-day because they know they have this resource to help them. That's kind of the first problem we try to solve is real-time access across 30 plus disciplines where PCP has a question, they hit a button within 30 seconds, they get matched with a specialist, they can chat with the specialist, wrap that case up in 5 minutes. And to date, that workflow has eliminated over 80% of ER visits and over 50% of specialist referrals just by connecting. And then the second problem we want to do is take the onus off the PCP's shoulders of finding where to send the patient. Where do I send this patient for this insurance to a female doctor who is high quality? How do you do that across every discipline? So what we do is we create a workflow where we integrate with EMRs. The provider just sends us the referral, and then we have a back end logic and a decision-making tree to match the patients for the referrals based on provider favorites, practice level favorites, as well as kind of some insurance information, find the highest quality specialists and process referrals to more thoughtful doctors. So avoid referrals if you can, but if you need to make referrals, make sure that we can help automate the decision making of where to send that patient, so that we can get the patient to more thoughtful specialists like yourself.
Yeah, thanks for saying I'm thoughtful. No, but also what I've noticed, which is good, is a lot of times you get these referrals from like independent practices in town, and then you don't have, like, if you get a referral from, let's say, Fairfax or some big place in Maryland, you can access through Epic everywhere, you can access some of the records or otherwise. But from independent practices, a lot of times you can't access the records. The patient comes in and tells you, oh, I had a lung nodule. And you're like, where do you do this? Yeah, no, I did it this and that place. And if you don't have access to the records, you don't have it. So basically, Picasso MD, when the provider refers to you, they can actually attach PDF files off the records so you know what you're dealing with when the patient comes over.
Yeah, the EMR is a big business. So you use Epic at GW, correct? So the reason why you're able to see it is because of the Epic interface.
Right.
And so Epic creates more value by getting more and more providers onto their platform, so you have more interoperability.
Right.
The problem is every other EMR, which there are a lot of electronic medical record companies in the US, there's no interoperability. And then on top of that, there's no way, unless the provider attaches images. So we kind of automate that. So when a provider sends a referral, we actually pull that information into the referral and then send it out. So that to create a little bit of that same interoperability, which you have with other Epic practices, we can kind of do it at scale, regardless of what the EMR or the provider is within the community. Exactly. It's a more thoughtful way of getting community to Dr. Diab patients so that you have that same visibility as you would within Epic.
So from that standpoint, have you tracked time from referral to visit right now, as opposed to what it is if the app is not used?
Yeah, so we're the average time. Yes, we track everything because everything's data through our platform. Yeah. So we are under 13 days versus a little over 30 days. So we're about a little over 50% faster. And the referral capture rates, meaning what percent of referrals sent actually end up showing up in the offices, is again about 60% higher. So there's one thing for you to send a referral out, but did that patient actually get scheduled and actually complete that visit? So yeah, so the goal is we have a more nuanced visibility into specialist behavior outcomes. When you're looking at different providers, you can see, oh, Dr. Diab, you know, when he answers those curbsides, he's avoiding ER rates at 80% of the time, specialist referrals at 50% of the time. He has a provider satisfaction score of 99.5%. He's seeing patients within 13 days and has an 80% completion rate. That all is visible now. And then you can compare that to other pulmonologists who may not have the same kind of thoughtful lens of communication and may not be as responsive. The end result being that people like yourself who do care should be prioritizing giving credit for those kind of care compared to those who are maybe less attentive and not as mission oriented. So the whole purpose of the platform in the end is create actual tool sets which can supercharge clinical decision making, tool sets to process referrals in a more thoughtful way, but more importantly, capture data, big data, to support those providers who are taking the steps to provide better care, empower them, shine a light on them compared to those who don't.
Yeah, so basically, but the data is all on the platform, but it can also probably be found online. But is this data searched mostly by referring providers or by patients too?
So yeah, it's all our internal proprietary data. And then so when we partner, the people we partner with generally are provider organizations that are looking to avoid ER visits, avoid specialty referrals, and then are vested in sending patients to more thoughtful specialists. So those are organizations that get paid by eliminating waste from the healthcare system. So the more they save, the better the outcomes they have, the more they get bonus checks from other organizations. So these are either accountable care organizations or insurance companies directly.
Right, right.
And believe it or not, they have a less nuanced understanding of the provider base than you would think. You would think they have all this big data and they have this very nuanced understanding. And the answer is they have a partial understanding. To give an example, you work at GW. By definition, you're going to be considered a higher cost provider because you're a GW pulmonologist, which is not true. You're actually a super thoughtful, kind, value-oriented specialist. So they have the macro data based off of claims and negotiated rates that GW has negotiated with your insurers. That's put you at a high cost designation. And then we provide local data. No, Dr. Diab answers communications thoughtfully. He's avoiding ER visits. He's avoiding referrals. He's getting the patients in 13 days. So it paints a more holistic approach about you. And so that red means less. And so, so we work with insurance companies, primary care providers. And what we do is we provide them with data to kind of help them understand who are more thoughtful specialists versus less.
Right, right. Yeah, so basically you're looking more at not only the cost per visit, but you're looking more at downstream revenue in terms of avoiding preventative care and avoiding our visits and hospital stays.
Yeah, people who are responsive, that are thoughtful and nice, kind, and trying to do the right things, there's no way to objectively quantify that.
Right.
How can you prove that Dr. Diab is well liked by his colleagues, that he's avoiding all this care? So everything becomes data. So after every interaction, we ask the PCP, how was the interaction with Dr. Diab? And it's literally like Uber, thumbs up, thumbs down, and why.
Right.
And that becomes part of the file that we share to highlight people like yourself. I don't ever show bad provider data. I just highlight the ones that are good.
Right.
So if they say, who's a good pulmonologist in DC? I was like, oh, Dr. Hassan Shami is fantastic. Dr. Khalid Diab is fantastic. And let me show you the data to support their care.
Right, right. And then, just for people to know what you did on the website or Picasso MD is you have a huge referral base of multiple specialists, multiple primary care physicians, and even nurse practitioner practices who are part of your database and connected to each other through this database. It's like a social media app, basically. You have followers, people follow you, people give you stars. Yeah. And so the second part that impressed me that you did, actually, initially it was more the referral part, but then what I've noticed is you've been going to small towns and underserved areas in the U.S. trying to help them out get access to care. So first, before we discuss this, how did this come about? Like, have you studied like the landscape in the U.S. in terms of, is there a deficiency of doctors in like some areas of the country? And can you describe that a bit?
Yeah, it's really eye-opening. First of all, I don't do anything. So we have a whole team dedicated to this. And most of the good stuff that comes out is from them, not me at all. You work with an organization. So yes, basically we think of us as a technology toolkit that connects primary care and specialists to do two things, for decision making and then processing referrals. That's what we do. And then you work with one organization, leads to another introduction to another organization. And then eventually some of the work that I'm the most proud of is helping underserved populations and rural populations. So what I was always afraid of was that this would just be a technology used by tech-enabled and very wealthy provider groups. And then when you go out beyond the DC walls, so we've been fortunate enough to be able to work with many markets from Maine all the way down to Florida and Arizona, et cetera. The significant percentage of that is with rural and underserved markets. When you go to those clinics, not only do they not have access, the closest specialist is 3 to 4 hours away and is 6 months away. So a patient walks in to a clinic with any kind of problem in rural and underserved parts of the country, that provider has basically, if they send a referral out, that patient is not going to be seen for months if they ever end up showing up. So their default is often ER. And when you go meet with them, you realize those providers are like operating basically like on the island. They have no infrastructure or support. And so they have to develop skills that allow them to survive. So when I first went to these clinics, I went to a highly qualified center. I was in Washington, D.C. the quality of providers in these markets are like your old school providers. You know, like they have to be able to handle a lot because they're dealing with patients and there's no safety net of specialty access. So much more skilled as a whole. That being said, they have no specialty care. Literally in Mississippi, as an example, if a patient is underinsured, like has Medicaid, and there's a pulmonology question, it's over. There's no, maybe they give the patient albuterol if they know what the albuterol is. And then if they refer the patient out to pulmonary, it's not going to happen. That's a 4-hour drive 6 months away. So the concept of now I can hit a button and get matched with Dr. Diab, who's a professor, you know, at a university setting, who's then able to actually, you know, provide a little bit of care to help that patient, for me, is something to be very proud of. It's like a true health equity. You are helping take care of a patient, regardless if they're uninsured, Medicaid, Medicare, commercial. And so like most of our growth outside the DC market is generally with underserved and rural populations because we're helping them solve that access issue.
Right. And have you looked at like also, I'm sure you could, I mean, your app is all about collecting data. So have you looked at avoidance of ER visits, decreasing costs of healthcare with this, and maybe even quality of care provided to the patients?
Yeah, I mean, that we actually wrote a white paper on this, published it on our website. But yeah, I was like, we should compare this. So right now in the Washington, D.C. area, we know the average time to connect the PCP with a specialist through our platform is under 30 seconds. We know the average outcome is a little over 80% ER avoidance, a little bit over 50% specialist referral avoidance. That's just for that curbside feature. I was like, how does that compare to rural Mississippi, rural Maine, rural North Carolina, rural Arizona, areas that have no specialty care? That was the same. Actually, the curbside time to match was 22 seconds. And our avoidance of care was actually a little bit higher. We're able to avoid a little bit more ER visits, a little bit more specialist referrals. So when people talk about health equity, for me, that means equal quality of care, irregardless of what your insurance is or where you live. And so then we're able to show that not only were we able to help support providers in major metropolitan areas, we're able to not only provide that level of care, maybe even higher level of care in a more rural setting. And so that's what allowed us to kind of gain a little bit of positive momentum, thankfully, with a lot of these clinics that are in rural and underserved markets. We work with many community health centers, and that's kind of become part of our core focus, is to scale that access.
Yeah, and basically for people who don't know what a curbside is, it's more like somebody sends you an x-ray. They can send you the data on the patient, their labs, their x-rays, and ask you a quick question, and then you answer them back. It can be a back and forth thing until they're satisfied with your answer, and then they give you like a thumbs up or thumbs down on the curbside.
Yeah, and we ask them pre and post what they're going to do. So exactly right. It's just a way to informally get clinical decision support across every specialty.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And so, to gain this access, I'm sure you have a team that's been negotiating, I guess, with insurance companies, trying to convince them, right, that this is something that will save them money down the road and provide better patient care. So have you been doing that? And that's how you started the process?
Yeah, exactly. Simple as that, right? So you start with, when it first started, it was one cardiologist, me, one GI specialist, and one orthopedist, and we would have like almost like you would text them and they would get back to you. And then that's evolved to a platform that's mobile and web-based. And we did that with one of our local insurance companies, which is a regional insurance company, Care First, Blue Cross Blue Shield. And then they have their own team of individuals who look on savings on the back end called actuaries. And so we did a pilot over a year and a half with a couple of provider groups that worked. So that ended up getting to a point where they built us into their coding system for billing, which is a big deal. And then that led to that us being presented at a conference, then other kind of insurance companies doing the same. So now we're partnered with Anthem or Elevance, which is the nation's second largest insurance company, and Florida Blue, which is the regional insurance company in Florida, a little bit with Arizona Blue. And so just trying to scale that, because in the end, they're the ones who are saying, you know, we're, you know, the average savings per communication we do through the platform is over $300. So they're really saving. So, you know, they should be part of the mission to kind of help subsidize the cost of this.
Right. And then again, one thing people need to know too, is when the insurance companies are saving, that hopefully means that insurance premiums would be lower for that area, because look at the area and they're like, okay, we have a lot of cost savings here, so maybe we can afford to give lower premiums for these areas.
There is no shortage of expense. I bet you your wait list to see you is probably weeks long. When I was seeing patients, my wait time to see me was several weeks long. Right. That's all waste. There should be no wait line. You should be able to see someone within a day. Anything beyond that is just superfluous. So there's plenty of volume for primary care. So there's plenty of volume for specialists. No one's going to lose on total cost of care. But if you kind of create a more thoughtful process, you can kind of create efficiencies along the way, which decreases healthcare expenditures. So the PCPs are happier. Specialists are actually seeing higher quality patients who really need to be seen. I, as a cardiologist, would much rather see a sick patient than a patient, you know, a 25-year-old with atypical chest pain, because that patient that is sick is going to be coming and see me for the rest of my life and his life or her life. And insurance companies can save. So you can actually create wins for everyone if you do it in a thoughtful way and in a methodical way, and gather data surrounding all the interactions.
Right.
That's what we try to do.
Exactly. So where do you see, now we're going to go into more like, where do you see healthcare heading in the US? Because it seems like for some people, it seems like the system is, like some people say, oh, the system's breaking apart. It's not doing well. But I don't think that's necessarily true. But of course, the cost of healthcare is very high. So where do you see healthcare heading in the US in the next 10 years?
Yeah, I think there's going to have to continue to be process improvement with regards to how people allocate payments. So you're seeing that with ACO arrangements. That's going to continue to grow. But in the end, we still live in, the more you do, the more you get paid. So until there's a fundamental shift in how payments are made, I don't think that, you know, unless you get out of the fee-for-service landscape, it's going to be hard to shift people unless they're culturally aligned to value. One thing that's going to spur change is going to be AI. A lot of what AI is going to be doing right now is going to be concentrating on large language models, like dictations, things like that, so I can learn behavior and can help with dictations, help with back office processes. So that will create more efficiency, which is great. But where it's really going to, I think, have a significant impact, not initially, but soon, is with things that we do, clinical decision making, reading radiographic images, things that are pattern recognition. At a certain point, if not already, we're going to be more and more reliant on the AI reads compared to radiologists, for instance.
Right.
I mean, I know that now for like stroke protocols, the AI read is sometimes used before the official neurology report comes out several hours later. So, and that's going to result in more efficiencies, disruption, and maybe kind of a shift in how we see where the total cost of care goes. Because if I don't need X person to read a bunch of films to generate revenue that can be done through a computer, then at least I can allocate that individual to do other activities. And so that will result in real change in the payment system. So for me, I think you always just follow the dollars until you can create a process which decreases healthcare expenditure at scale. Then the providers will not follow suit at scale until their bottom line gets impacted.
Final question for you is, where do you see Picasso MD heading in the future? What's its role going to be in the healthcare landscape in the US, or at least in the DC area in the US?
I hope some positive impact. Who knows? It depends on which day you catch me. I would like to be part of a narrative, like be part of a solution where We are a small part of the component of helping organizations that are looking to really impact specialist spend. I mean, literally for every $1 we spend in the primary care office, $5 is spent outside the primary care office. So really, when it goes following the money, the specialist arm is really the most impactful when it comes to overall impact and total cost of care. So I would like to hopefully still be around in several years and still contributing, and more importantly, being part of a larger ecosystem that cares and believes about the similar problem that we're trying to solve. So one thing I know is like, we're not the end solution, and I just want to be part of a larger picture, a larger cohort of people who care about the same mission and be a small part of that win of making a positive impact. So that's where I would like to be.
Yeah, and I think to me, like a huge positive impact, just giving access to care to all these underserved areas in the US that people don't necessarily think about all the time.
Yeah, I would hope. I would like to believe that stays at top of mind. And it's because of people just like yourself, providers who are looking to help on that front. You know, yes, you make a little penance here or there, but the reason why you joined is to help. And so the more we can get individuals like yourself to be working collaboratively, the higher the chances of success for the group as a whole.
Right. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Reza, for being on the podcast. This was...
Thank you.
Hopefully, people will learn more about what you've done, what Picasso MD has done, and somewhat about the healthcare landscape in the US, past and future. Thanks.
I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.